Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand.
It was at hand, but being inaugurated is a lot easier than governing.
And I must weigh all of the challenges that our nation faces. I don't have the luxury of committing to just one. Indeed, I'm mindful of the words of President Eisenhower, who, in discussing our national security, said, "Each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration, the need to maintain balance in and among national programs." Over the past several years, we have lost that balance. We failed to appreciate the connection between our national security and our economy.
So, President Obama, first from his inaugural and from his Afghanistan speech last week, different tone, different content, and in about an hour, we will bring you the president's jobs address. And there are two complaints you hear a lot about President Obama right now. He's doing too much, and he's doing too little, like talking too much about health reform instead of jobs, but letting Congress take the health reform lead. Do you want him doing more health reform or less? In any case, with the president's Afghanistan speech now made, this job speech maybe being loaded into the teleprompter as we speak, and yes, health reform still front and center, his approval rating has fallen below 50%. New York Magazine political reporter John Heilman had a cover story last week that argues Obama can be doing too much and too little at the same time because he has not yet sent a coherent message of what his presidency is about. New York Magazine's John Heilman joins me now. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Always great to be here.
Big part of your article is questioning the president's decision to let Congress write the specifics of the stimulus bill early in the year and the health care reform bill now. But he's trying to learn from where President Clinton failed, isn't he? The Clinton health bill was handed down from on high, and Congress never bought in.
It's true. And there's, you know, there's a huge amount of kind of tactical virtue to what they're doing. I mean, they would argue, I think Rahm Emanuel would argue, that this is such a huge piece of legislation and it's so hard to get past that the only way you can do it and the way to get the Congress to have a skin in the game is to bring them in and have them run the show. I would only say that I think that there is, in both the case of the stimulus and health care reform, there might have been a happy medium. I mean, the problem is that they may have overlearned the lessons of the Clinton administration. And that's to say, I mean, I think if you go to Capitol Hill, I'll take this out of my own, away from my own view. If you go and talk to Democrats on Capitol Hill, whether you talk to the centrist Democrats or liberal Democrats, they all have a similar kind of view, which is that over the summer, the administration kind of let the debate get away from them and allowed the debate to be defined on terms that were not advantageous either to the administration or to Democrats because it was always unclear and continues to be unclear. Are there any lines in the sand? Is there anything the president believes in beyond 60 votes in the Senate and 118 votes in the House? And that's kind of the, you know, if you ask, is he in favor of the public option? Well, he would like to see a public option, but it's not a deal breaker. There's nowhere where he kind of decided to put down his marker. And I think for a lot of Democrats, there have been various times throughout the debate where it's been, please, President Obama, come here and tell us what you want, what your bottom line is. Lead us someplace. And that has been absent.
But let me push back on this a little bit, because isn't the marker a big national health insurance bill with nearly 100% coverage when it's all done, with requirements that everybody get coverage, with subsidies for people who can't afford coverage, with requirements that employers pay for health insurance or pay into a fund, with a tax on the upper earners or the so-called Cadillac health plans to help fund this? I mean, there's a lot in there that you could say is the core of this bill, isn't there? And therefore, the core of what the president demands.
Well, those are the things that may end up being in the bill, although I could, you know, we could go to some of those specifics, and it's still not clear how the bill is going to be paid for. Mm-hmm. For instance, Cadillac plans versus a tax on the rich.
Right.
If you look at the House version of the bill, most of the things you just named, Brian, were not things the administration insisted on. What the administration said was, we want more coverage. We want deficit neutrality. That's basically all they said.
Big things.
Those are big things. And I think
you get to 95% coverage in America from where we were and reduce the deficit or have it be deficit neutral over 10 years. Those are huge things.
And let's be clear. I'm not trying to declare health reform a failure before it even fails or before it even succeeds. All I would say is that, again, from the point of view of a lot of Democrats, even if the healthcare reform passes, and even if what we get is halfway decent legislation, both of which are in serious doubt at this moment, I think a lot of Democrats think that they've lost the political fight here already. There's a reason why the president, why a majority of Americans are not in favor of healthcare reform now in the abstract. They're not in favor of the bills as currently written, and they think that President Obama is their approval rating on this issue is about 45%.
Obama's below 50 on Afghanistan. He's below 50 on health reform. He's below 50 on jobs. One issue you raise with letting Congress write the particulars is that it contradicts Obama's campaign message of post-partisanship, since the Reid-Pelosi Congress is quite partisan. And you could argue that maybe they have to be after Bush or because McConnell and Boehner say no to everything. But does the president really have a choice? Because the Republican approach to him from day one has been just say no to every domestic item. And I don't know what he could give them that would make them say yes.
Well, it's a very good question, and I certainly think that the way things have played out, we have a pretty good indication that Republicans were kind of bound and determined to oppose President Obama on almost everything. There was a question about this right after the inauguration, when President Obama's approval rating was in the high 70s or low 80s, when the stimulus bill was first crafted. And we'll never know the answer to this question, because what the president did, in fact, was offer something that looked like tonal bipartisanship. He said, we'll have Republicans come to the White House, we'll listen to what you have to say, but in the end, Senator Reid and Speaker Pelosi are going to craft this bill. I don't know what would have happened if President Obama had gone to Capitol Hill and said to John Boehner and said to Mitch McConnell and to Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, I want a bill that all of you agree on. I don't care. I want it to be somewhere between $800 billion and $1 trillion. I want you to go into a room and I want you to come out a week from now with a bill that somehow all of you can agree on. That would have been a rather bold thing to do. And it would have maybe failed, but it would have been a huge effort towards substantive bipartisanship, which is again, as you point out, an important part of what he ran on. Maybe the most identifiable core of his candidacy was, in fact, moving past partisanship, because none of the specific policies of Obama's run for president are things that we can remember or that have been part of this first year.
John Holland from New York Magazine. Has his language changed? I feel like we're hearing the sober Obama from part of the campaign, as we heard in that Afghanistan speech clip, but not the soaring Obama of hope and change. And I don't hear the postpartisan language in particular of continually reflecting conservative Americans' concerns, not necessarily right-wing Republican politicians or, you know, Glenn Beck's concerns, right, but ordinary conservative Americans' concerns, acknowledging their legitimacy over and over again in speech, even as he does what he thinks is right.
I think it has been a very rough year for them, and I think it's been a rough year for him. And they will say, his people around him, the closest people to him, will say, oh, President Obama knew exactly what he was getting into in terms of what Republicans would be like in terms of his presidency. I think that's untrue, and I think it's untrue for the following reason. In the very brief national career that he had before he decided to run for president, he was a rare national politician who had never been on the receiving end of a sustained attack from the right wing. He had never been the target of the right wing freak show. This is the first time when he had to feel that. And I think he's kind of beaten down by a little bit. But what I would say, Brian, is on top of that, I mean, sobriety obviously comes to all presidents. And he has an enormous number of huge problems on his plate. But what's interesting is that not only is the rhetoric not appealing, or the substance not appealing to the center or to conservative America, as you put it, mainstream conservative America, but the rhetoric is not particularly appealing to the left either. I mean, he finds himself in this position right now where the center thinks that he's governing like a crazy liberal, and liberals think he's governing like a compromising centrist. It is a bad position to be in politically when you are that indistinct and you have no real constituency that's four square behind you.
And so ultimately, you quote critics who wonder if Obama has no central theme to his presidency, like great presidents seem to have had, what one of your sources calls a theory in case. What does that mean, very briefly?
Well, a theory of the case, I think, you know, what you had during the campaign is you had, and this is specifically goes to the economy, you had a lot of very elevated rhetoric, which is very inspiring and I think very valuable. You also had some very kind of sensible policy prescriptions that he put forward during the campaign that were basically white paper prescriptions. What you didn't have was a middle It was the missing middle. You didn't have a theory, a cohesive argument that put those things together. Bill Clinton had that. He had, when he ran for president, he had putting people first. He had the human capital agenda. He had globalization, the information economy. He knitted together his proposals to a big theory about what government could do in this new moment in history. Ronald Reagan had something similar. It was an anti-theory of the case, which was the government is basically the problem all the time. But Obama doesn't have that. There is no narrative that he puts forward, and it's part of why I think the first year has felt like a little bit like a themeless pudding. We don't really know how all this stuff kind of fits together into a vision of where he wants to take us.
So, listeners, I want to follow up on this in the coming days with you. Is the Obama presidency so far a themeless pudding? And if you're getting angry hearing this and you think, no, this is my president, I voted for him and he is about something, put his theory of the case down on paper. What is the central organizing principle of the Obama presidency to you so far? Write it on our comments page and we will come back to it in coming days and see what you've come up with. If you feel yourself a strong Obama supporter in particular, write down what is the central organizing principle of this presidency, if it's working for you. Do it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We're not taking calls on this. We want this in writing, and we'll come back to it. So go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. As we run out of time, John, I'll just plant a seed here for listeners who want to do this. If I'm going to push back and say I'm not sure he's lacking so much in definition, I might say one way to look at Obama after a year is that he is a progressive pragmatist or a pragmatic progressive. He's taken the position that health reform and a global warming cap and trade bill are central to our long-term economic health. That's the heart of the Obama doctrine to me, if there is one. Green energy and universal health as long-term economic fixes, not economic costs. And then you add to that compromise on the size of the stimulus, but he still threw $700 billion at it, mostly to preserve state and local government services. He's putting KSM on trial in civilian court, but detainees who attack the military in military court, there is a there. He agreed to continue the war in Afghanistan, but with an eye toward ending it, enraging conservatives. You know, he saved Wall Street to prevent what he thought would be a Great Depression caused by a financial system collapse. He revived the idea of a world without nuclear weapons. Does that all add up to nothing you can put your finger on?
Certainly in your mind,
it's
Brian,
a lot of stuff.
Yes, it's a lot of stuff. And I think maybe you should go and work in the White House communications office. You seem to have a pretty good theory of the case yourself. I think it adds up to, look, I mean, in everything you just said, if I wanted to be a left-wing critic, I could find horrendous inconsistencies and things
right.
that struck me as not as pragmatism, but as sellouts of principle. And if I was a conservative, I would say, you know, look at the stimulus bill. I mean, or even a sort of a market-based economist, I would say, hey, I'm all in favor of green jobs, Brian. And what happened to the money and the stimulus that would have been about building a green economy? We didn't have that. We had the money for the electric grid shrunk down to almost nothing. We had compromises that undermined the pragmatic goals that you're saying that they're driving towards. I just think there's what the president could do is to try to square those circles. He needs to be explaining how those circles are squared and not merely allowing these things to kind of drift as I fear he has, as someone who wants the president to succeed. I do not come at this as someone who's trying to tear him down, but someone who wants all of this to cohere. I just need to understand better. And I pay a fair amount of attention to this. I don't understand quite how it coheres, and I want it to.
Last word in this segment goes to Bayestun on our comments page. Conservatives revile him. Liberals are disillusioned with him. This guy turns out to be all right. John Heilman from New York Magazine. He had the cover story, Whatever Happened to Barack Obama, in last week's magazine. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll go to Trenton next and talk to Loretta Weinberg, the state senator who's leading the charge for the gay marriage bill. Looks like a floor vote probably Thursday, and things may turn out differently in Trenton from Albany. Let's find out.